This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Booksplode Roughneck by Jeff Lemire.
This world's gone crazy. At least that's what the headlines say. I don't know, it just seems like lately. It's only bad news every day. They said a change was gonna come, but I don't think they meant for.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Booksplode on Roughneck by Jeff Lemire. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
I'm here.
And this is a Booksplode show we do every other month thanks to our patrons. We go to patreon.com/iFanboy, and they gave, and they reached a certain amount of money. We hit their goal for adding Booksplodes and Talksplodes. So here we are discussing Roughneck, the latest OGN from Jeff Lemire, published by Gallery 13. I've never heard of them.
Is that a
Simon
is that
and Schuster?
Yeah, I was gonna say it's an imprint of a major publisher, right?
Yeah.
Is it Simon and Schuster? Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Good for them.
I didn't even know he was working on this.
I didn't even know either.
Anyway. I was like, all right, let me check my contacts here at Top Cow or Top Shelf, get a copy. Wait, hold on.
Lemire's been a little prolific recently.
Yes.
Hasn't he?
I think he's re-energized now that he's back to focusing on his indie work of the kind he was first known for when he blew up on the scene, as Roughneck is certainly more in the vein of Essex County than it is, say, Superboy.
You mean the rural Canadian hockey genre?
Yes.
And this is definitely more the Jeff Lemire we know than, oh, I don't know, Bloodshot Reborn.
So he's been doing that. He's been doing Royal City with Image Comics. He says he's stepping away from his Marvel work. If that means we're getting more Roughnecks or Royal Cities, I'm all for it.
I will go as far to say that this is like, I don't want to say a return to form, because that suggests that he was out of form, right? And I don't mean to do that, because I have enjoyed some of the stuff he's done, you know, over the past couple of years at various publishers and things like that. But this could have been another chapter of Essex County.
Yes, and I was so happy reading it.
So was I, and I was also, like, brokenhearted, but yes, I was happy to read it because it was so wonderful, but it ripped my heart out and stomped on it.
Well, that's what Essex County did too.
Yeah, that's what he does. That's what Lemire does to you.
So the story of Roughneck takes place in a small village in northern Canada. It's mostly native people. And actually, the only criticism I have from the book is I didn't know they were native people until it was said in the middle of the book.
Yeah.
Which did change how it all read once you knew that.
Were you supposed to know that, though? I feel like he delivered that information later on purpose. It's sort of like all of a sudden you've got
a lot more context.
Yeah, like it's like, oh, this is what we've been looking at the whole time, and this is why it matters. It's a choice, I think, more than a,
I don't know,
oversight.
I mean, I think it's just a consequence of black and white.
Maybe.
But it wasn't black and white. I mean, he selectively used color throughout this. So I don't think you can lean on the it's black and white. I think that maybe it is the byproduct of it being blue toned or whatever, black and white, and not then the flashbacks being colored. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, because it was the same thing where I had no idea there was a native, you know, I would say Native American, Native Canadian influence.
First Nation, I think that's what they say in Canada. I think that it added to, I mean, if you want to look at the, we're getting into it a little, but if you want to look at sort of why the character feels alienated, I think that the whole time you're like, what's he so mad about? And then as you sort of get to that, then that's, you know, that's another part of it. That's why. And he's half. So it means that, you know, he's double alienated.
Yeah. The combination of the ancestral origins plus with his white, you know, Caucasian father who was abusive, like that's where you get the gist of the character.
Yeah. First Nation. You know, and the other thing is, to me, it's kind of interesting from, an anthropological point of view, because the things that are going on between the First Nations people in Canada are different than sort of the things that we would read about, say, like in Scalped. It's another, like, I've seen bits of it in stories here and there. And so, like, there's a different kind of tension going on there, which is kind of interesting because it's not something that we think of necessarily when we think of Canada that often. Right. I was like, that's kind of bold to take on Jeff Lemire. And then I wondered, well, what does he know about it that I don't? And so, like, I kind of liked that.
So the real top line story for Roughneck is the story of Derek, who is an ex-NHL player, an ex-Ranger, and
Was he ex-NHL? Because they showed the flashback.
Yes.
Oh, it was NHL. You're right. I'm sorry. Go on. Carry on.
That story doesn't work if he's not pro.
Yeah, he was an ex-Ranger who was more of a thug on the ice than he was a skilled player, but he still was a pro hockey player. And due to an incident on the ice, which we get to in the book, he was no longer an NHL player. So now he's back in a small town living the life of an angry drunk who once had glory. And his sister pops up on the scene and then things go haywire. And I don't mean in a wacky way. I mean everything just sort of turns to hell. And we slowly peel back the layers on their lives, why they are the way they are, because she has lots of problems too. And as they come together, they try not to fall apart. I thought this was great.
This was like I finished it, I shut the book, and then I immediately went to our Slack channel and I wrote to you guys, God damn.
It felt very satisfying.
Yeah, Connor yelled at me to save it. But yeah, it felt satisfying. I read it in one sitting.
Yep.
It flowed. I mean, it's a thick book. There's no page number, so I can't give you the page count. It's probably up on Amazon, actually. So it's a thick book. It's like Essex County was like, I feel like half of this size, but you know, it never slowed down for me. You know what I mean? Like it read at a good natural pace, so much so that I couldn't put it down.
Well, he uses a lot of big panels. It's 272 pages.
Yeah. Still, it's pretty formidable. Yeah.
Yeah. So. He uses a lot of big panels. It breathes really well. I too, when I went in and arrived in the mail after we picked it, I was like, oh, shit. But yeah. I read it in a couple hours. It wasn't too bad. But I mean, we made the joke earlier that this could have been Chapter 4 of Essex County because that was very much Canadian hockey ennui. But
this is deeper.
It felt of the world, but not of the world. Of the world in that it's an interesting Canadian community that I don't know anything about. And a small town way in the north where they drive around sometimes in snowmobiles instead of cars.
Or as they referred to them, snow machines.
That is the correct nomenclature.
Yeah. He took that snow machine.
Did you do an accent there for a second?
No, I just said he took that snow machine. Okay. Very straightforward. No accent.
Josh,
I don't do voices.
What did you think of
I don't
this?
Do voices.
I thought it was pretty good. It was very much in the vein of the work that he'd done before, and I was trying to decide if I liked that or not. But I know that I think I liked it more than when he's trying to do stuff that is not so natural to him. I liked that. I think there were risks in it when you're talking about, you know, sort of the First Nation stuff, and you're talking about these little towns, and it's pretty grim. And I thought, you know, when he first came on the scene, he was pretty young, I guess. And he hadn't, he's 40. Yeah. So that would have been over 10 years ago. And in that time, he's pretty much worked in comics the whole time. And I was like, where's he getting all this from? I found myself wondering that enough. And like, how's he making sure it's authentic? And then not in a bad way. I was just thinking about it, like where he's coming up with this. And I thought it was really interesting that it was on like Simon and Schuster, and just thinking about that stuff. And as I got away from the book, so I kind of breezed through it pretty quickly. And then as I've gone away from it now, we were getting towards this, and I was thinking about what I was going to talk about. I found it growing on me more. I don't think I was really blown away necessarily.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a blown away kind of book. I mean, it's very, very emotional And, you know, and the thing is, like, what got us about Essex County is that Essex County had a relatability and a tragicness to that, to them, to those stories. You know, there's a romantic tragedy within Essex County. And admittedly, it's been years since I've read Essex County, so I probably need to revisit it. But I got, you know, Roughneck was definitely made with the same ingredients, but I got the sense that Lemire is a much better creator now. And the nuance of this story was this is evolved, graduated Essex County. Like, if Essex County was like undergrad work, this is postgrad work.
Yeah, I'm stuff wondering, like, what if I go back and read Essex County now? What will I think of it?
Yeah. Oh, God, that second volume. Oh. But I think it'll still be great, because what makes Lemire so great as a graphic novelist is his ability to this weird magic that happens in the combination of his weird looking figures and the way he can draw sadness and longing and hurt and, you know, like, all, and even happiness and smiling, and he has a very artistic, individualistic style in terms of illustrating emotion, and that used as, not I want to say as a weapon, but as a tool within the context of the story, for me is just like a 1-2 punch that just gets you. And, like, you know, and whereas this story is, you know, very specific, small town, this one, you know, ex-hockey player, and then his sister who's addicted to drugs and pregnant and with a bad guy and got a bad boyfriend who hits her, you know, like, kind of this bad situation. And he presents that in the context of the present day of the story, and then layers in these flashbacks that eventually give you the context of who these people are and where and how they got to where they are and what they're dealing with. And then, you know, with the climax of the story, you get, you know, kind of, you get a happy ending.
Yeah.
You know, which I thought is, it was brave of Lemire as well too. And, like, you get, it's like, it's quite, we often in our real lives, we talk a lot about the stuff that we need to process and the emotional baggage and the stuff I need to unpack and the stuff we need to deal with. And very rarely do people actually deal with that. A lot of people just carry it. But in this story, you get this, you know, Derek, the main character, faces the demon of his father and channels it and deals with it in his own way, while his sister literally faces the father. She goes and finds him and faces him and deals with him in that way. And you then later in the story find out about the First Nation stuff. You find out about their mother and what happened and how she tried to leave and the car accident. And just like, and it just, and it builds and builds and builds. And Lemire is able to also layer in visuals to just make you feel that as well too. When he shot the moose, and you see there's a moment when Derek and his friend are out hunting and they shoot a moose, and they go to, the moose is laying on the ground and they go to address it, and you just see like the blue and white kind of, you know, the duotone of the majority of the present day of the book, and then kind of the air leaving the moose in color, and you see like a moment of the moose's happiness. And like that hit me like things like that just got me. You know, every 30 or 40 pages there was a splash of color in the form of a flashback or in the form of a vision of happiness that just chewed up my insides. And you know,
you mentioned his art. I mean, even his happy characters are sad. I mean,
yes, yeah,
it really works. His art is, I don't want to say challenging, but it's very polarizing. People don't like it. People love it. One of the things I love about it is that everyone is sad in it, and that leads an emotional weight to the story. I mean, even the smiling characters, they have sad eyes. And in this story, it's entirely appropriate because this is a small town full of sadness for various reasons. And one of the things I liked about the book a lot was that the further you went through the book, the more you understood why these people were so sad. And at first you're like, okay, this is why they're sad. And then you got further along, oh, this is why they're sad. Oh, this is why they're sad. And it's like anything in life. If you have bad breaks, they compound on you, and you get to a point where you are drinking in a bar, picking fights just to beat on someone. I just found this completely arresting. I couldn't stop reading it.
Yep.
I also really liked the characters. They were really well-rounded and interesting. The more you learned about them, the more interesting they got. I really liked them by the end. I really liked Beth, and I really liked Derek by the end.
I liked the protagonists. I thought the antagonist, like the dad, was a little one-dimensional, and so was the boyfriend, like the, you know, Terminate T-1000 that was coming after them.
Well, they weren't the focus. They were the device that led them to this place, right? They were the shadow in the background. It was more about these people coming to grips with that darkness. They didn't need to be well-rounded.
Yeah, like, I don't need to know the shitty boyfriend's motivation. You know, I just need to know that he's a threat that they have to deal with, and that threat makes Derek face his demon in terms of violence and how he uses violence and the effect of his father and that sort of thing. You know, like they're devices, you know.
I love that he dropped this on us. Like, remember a couple years ago we had Mazzucchelli drop that book on everybody, Mysterious Polyp.
Mysterious Polyp, yeah.
Nobody knew he was making it, and this just appeared.
Well, I wouldn't go as far to say that we didn't know. I mean, someone had to have known.
I'm not saying it was secret, but I'm saying it wasn't like it was well publicized, and all of a sudden there was a new Jeff Lemire OGN out. It just sort of happened, which I like.
Yeah, no, I like
a bunch of interviews 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, it's funny how that works. It's like, you know, and Jeff has been doing, you know, Lemire has been doing, like he did that book with Gore Downie from Tragically Hip, the Canadian, I forgot the name of it. But, you know, it's like, you know, he's doing stuff other than the superhero stuff we've seen. I just saw on Publishers Weekly, they have the announcement of Simon & Schuster signing this in October 2013. So yeah, that was the first kind of mention of it when they got the rights to it. But I didn't hear anything about it, and I was working in the industry at that time. I don't remember hearing. So he's clearly been working on this for 4 years, which it's funny because I would much rather, a book like Roughneck every 4 years than a year on Extraordinary X-Men like he did, you know, where he's got walls around him and editorial and stuff, and, you know, let him tell his own stories, you know, and that's why I think, you know, that I think that's one of the reasons, like, this is like, yeah, this is the Lemire we fell in love with, all, you know, 10 years ago.
And it's also the Lemire makes him special and interesting and unique.
Yeah.
You know, when he's doing Old Man Logan, it's good, but it's not like super unique. There's a lot of people doing Old Man Logan. There's no one else doing this kind of story out there, at least that I'm aware of. There could be, and if there are, please let me know. Yeah. But
so interesting enough, I'm doing a little more. I probably should have done this research before we did the show. But this Gallery 13 imprint of Simon & Schuster is launching with this book, with Jeff Lemire's Roughneck.
Well, that'd be why I've never heard of it.
Yeah, exactly. And then apparently there's a American translation of French cartoonist Christophe Chabut's story Alone. And then they're republishing a reissue version of Stephen King and Bernie Wrightson's Creepshow.
Hmm.
So interesting, but I can't think of a better way to launch an imprint than with Essex County-esque, again, return to form book from Lemire. I love this. It was, I didn't know what to expect from it. Connor, you told me like, hey, we're gonna do this book. I was like, all right, cool. I ordered it, just sight unseen, and then the same thing when I got in the mail and saw how thick it was and saw the pages and then started flipping through it and saw the use of color and saw like he was kind of doing some watercolors and all this sort of stuff. Like this, I don't know why this feels more right than Royal City. Or more right than even of the Underwater Welder, it's these kind of really emotionally charged personal stories that I think he does so well.
There's no gimmick to it.
Yeah, yeah, it's honest.
I think that he did Essex County a couple of times, and then he had the thing of like, well, what can I do and how can I sell it? And also at the time he's working at DC and Marvel, and that's all about the pitch and the. Yeah. And so this is just like, let me just do one of my stories. And it doesn't have to be a thing. He doesn't have to be the hookup. He welds things underwater, but that's a metaphor.
Right. And it's a time travel thing and all this sort, I think he's his best when he's dealing just regular people writing about their lives and how they feel and this, these sort of stories. Like, this is just, I love this one. Like, I'm like, this is a keeper.
It's funny when we got it, like you, I just knew it was out. I didn't know anything about it, and I didn't even read the plot description. I just dived right in, which is good because when I went back and read the plot description on the book flap, it's basically beat for beat the entire story.
Yeah.
I don't know why they do that. I don't know why they do that. You would have several surprises ruined for you if you read this plot description on the book flap.
They figure that even people who are reading don't read. And then the people who do, they don't want to be surprised, so they need to know what's up.
I love sad, scruffy, angry Jeff Lemire characters. I think it's funny because he is not that guy.
That we know of.
At least in appearance, he just looks like a very nice, normal dude. And every time we've interacted with him, he's been a very nice, normal dude. But all his characters just look like they've been punched 18 times in the face. And they're really sad about it. And it's great.
And honestly, that's more realistic and honest than most stories. His characters carry the weight of their experiences visually, you know, and then the non-visual aspects of it are what drive that story, and his connection, his ability to communicate, to convey that, you know, through it is, I mean, again, it goes, you know, kind of marvels of what, the sequential kind of comic story or graphic novel kind of format can do. Cause I don't know if someone can write this level of despair and heaviness and weightness. They probably can with words. A talented writer absolutely could, but I don't know if I would get the same emotional resonance or reaction that I would get by seeing it on the page the way Lemire does it.
So, you know, what's interesting to me is that I've been thinking about, you know, this is a guy who spent decade, say, more or less, in mainstream comics. And his visual style doesn't seem to have been influenced by that very much, right? At least in sort of big ways. Meaning that, you know, his layouts are all pretty similar. It's almost always three horizontal panels across a page. Sometimes they're subdivided a little bit, you know, but basically it's that shape. Most of his character interaction stuff is a, you know, chest and head shot,
yep,
of a person who's center frame. There's not a lot there. And clearly at this point, like, you know, there's no way he's not sophisticated enough to know that there's other things to do. So he's making that as a choice, which I find really interesting. And I, you know, cause you know, we saw it all the way through Essex County. We saw it through Sweet Tooth. We saw it through other stuff. And like, that's the way he does it. And it actually works really well, because you get to the point when they don't do that, you know, and there's like the big color shot of a hockey hit, but even that's really up close and personal. There's no, you know, big epic shot. Basically,
it has rubbed off on him. Superhero Comics has not changed his
personal style. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Like he's not trying to do something he's not, which I find very interesting. Which means that these choices are deliberate,
right?
And what's
funny is that when you do get panels that move away from the medium shot or the close up or whatever, it's two pages of the snowy landscape and a small snow machine going by. Yeah. Like you know what I mean, like they're, he pulls way way back, and that sparseness, or that, you know, the vastness of the full page of the snow landscape helps you. You know, it you know, like it's a loneliness. You know what I mean? It's illustrating that, you know, what's going on in the story at that point. It's well used. Like he knows when to pull back the camera. It's not as often, but
even when he does that, it's still pretty reserved.
Which yeah, is, absolutely. Yeah,
like he's not trying to impress you with the art. He's like, and it, which is to me a very good decision in comic books. Is like he knows the main thing of the art is to tell the story, and so he's like, I know exactly how to do that with this stuff.
Yep,
and he's not. You know, that you're not going to get to a Mateo Scalera type spread in this. Like he's not. He's like, nope, not. That's not my game.
Right. So let me ask you at the end. Spoiler warning, right?
Sure.
Derek dies, right?
No.
No.
No, he's not.
Because what happens is that he gets beat up by the ex-boyfriend. He doesn't fight back.
He's walking through the woods.
Yeah, but he meets the dog that's been haunting him throughout the whole thing, and they walk off into the woods together.
Yes, he's dead.
The dog is his innocence. The dog is his.
Yeah, he's dead. You're right, because she wouldn't be leaving to go to the fort if he was still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the dog was his anger, but.
Yeah, the dog represents what, you know, whatever his father had made it. You know what I mean? Like the barking dog and all this sort of stuff. And now it's the dog isn't barking. The dog is like they're all he's happy and they meet together and then they go off in the woods. He's dead.
Yeah, you're right. You're totally right. He's dead. Because originally, when he gets hurt, I was like, oh shit, he's dead. And then you have the black pages, and you're like, oh shit, he definitely is dead. And then the next thing you see him, and you're right, but I didn't. Because the last segment was all silent, I think I threw, or except for two word balloons, I probably went through it too quickly. You're right, he totally is dead.
It tricks you into thinking there's interaction with him, but there isn't.
Yeah. And now I'm tearing up again. So.
Oh. I thought the smartest thing about the whole book was the decision at the end not to beat the shit out of the guy, but to give them a reason to arrest him, even though it was sacrificing himself.
Oh, I was as soon as I realized, I was like cheering for him. I was like, yeah, you know, like that was great. It was, and what's funny is that it's a dual, like it helped, it took care of the boyfriend, it gave him the reason to arrest them, but then also helped him come to peace with all of his inner, you know, like his, you know, inner demons. And, you know, but unfortunately he died, but still. You know, it's the moment his head hits that's the thing. The moment when he gets into the fight with Wade, and there's the two page spread of him punching him. And then there's a full page panel where his head hits the ground, it's a thud. And you see from his ear, You see his little sister and his mother and his dad and him as a hockey player, just like when the moose died. Like, that's the moment. He cracked his head on the pavement, and that's what killed him.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God, now I'm wrecked. God damn it, Jeff Lemire. Good right. stuff.
So
good stuff.
Ratings.
Ratings.
I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Yeah, I want to give it a 4.5 too, but now that I say that, I think I don't know why it's short of a 5. I'm going to give it a 5.
All right.
4.
Mm.
Wow.
I thought you were going to go 3, 3.5.
All right, sticking with it.
Well, I'm going to keep it.
I have the book.
I'm not giving it away.
Realistically, am I going to read it again? Probably not.
This is great. This is fantastic. I would give this to someone as a present. Like, you want to read a graphic novel? Here, check this out. Like, this is definitely one that I would recommend to people to read, because it just it's great. It's great.
All right, so if you've read Roughneck, you can go to iFanboy.com. There'll be a post for this show. You can tell us what you thought of it. And next month, we'll be back with a Talksplode. That's our interview show that was brought to you by the Patreons at patreon.com/iFanboy. And tune in next week for our comic thoughts and the Pick of the Week podcast. And until then, we'll be back. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened, because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.